This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
In the year 2000, Terry Virts transitioned from an Air Force fighter pilot to a space shuttle commander. During his 217 days in space, he took more photographs than any other NASA astronaut. The stunning photos have been compiled into a book published by National Geographic titled View from Above. I caught up with Terry Virts recently and talked to him about his time spent on the International Space Station, Earth's varying colors, and celestial navigation. I'm Beth Goldlay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. I anticipated stunning photographs in this book, and you delivered. But what I didn't expect was to learn so much about the International Space Station, and I had no idea all of the countries involved. Are there 17 countries, is that right?
Yeah, there's a lot of aspects of the space station. The science is obviously the mission, the engineering part of building this thing in space and learning about how to live and work in space. But I think the most important aspect of the space station is the international part of it, the international cooperation. And I talk a lot about some stories of that during my training leading up to my flight, and actually while I was in flight, on my most recent flight, the Russians had annexed Crimea, and the Ukraine civil war was happening, and the West put sanctions on. And so there was a lot of really bad things happening between Western-Russian relations here on Earth. And during that time, I trained and launched into space. And I had a great time working with my Russian colleagues in training. I really loved flying with them. My Russian crewmates were some of the best part of my space mission. I'm still friends with them to this day. There's a whole chapter on emergencies, and there's a story about how the Russians helped us work through this potentially deadly and really station-ending ammonia emergency that could have happened. And in the middle of all these bad things on Earth, the space station is a great example of how you can have international cooperation. And not to be just completely unrealistic or whatever, but people are people and we can work together. And the station was a great example of that.
I was also reminded of the international nature of the space, of this, you know, I want to call this a space endeavor, but I don't want to say endeavor because that's the name of a ship.
But so to speak, right.
You received special treatment on your birthday, is that right?
So we have this thing called CAPCOM. It's the person on the ground that talks on the radio to the crew. So there's Houston, the flight controllers and flight directors. They're like the engineers in charge of the mission. But the CAPCOM is usually an astronaut or a non-astronaut who's on the radio communicating between the crew and ground. And on my birthday, I had Leslie Ringo is my lead CAPCOM. She's awesome. So they sang Marilyn Monroe, Happy Birthday, Mr. President, you know, and she sang that to John Kennedy. So they called me all day long on my birthday. They called me Mr. President, but it was great. But then on the next day, I was just back to being Joe, average flight engineer. So just like a president, you know, you're a hero for some time in the White House. And then when you're done, you're back to, you know, shopping at Walmart and having to pay your mortgage.
I thought it was great, though, that you were being called Mr. President from all of the control centers. And you listed them, Houston, Moscow, Japan.
Japanese accent. Yeah, it was funny to hear the different accents. It was great.
Now, on page 47... you described the feeling you had when Endeavour's main engines shut down. You wrote, "I remember thinking, I'm finally floating. The sensation was similar to falling, like you get when you jump off a diving board. Your gut seems to float up into your throat, your face and lips move, and there is an urge to flail your arms." But then you go on to describe, I mean, when you're going off of a diving board, the feeling stops abruptly when your gravity catches up. But you were in space for 200 days. How long did you have that urge to flail your arms?
Yeah, well, the engine shut down and somebody turns on the anti-gravity machine and you're floating. And actually, I had thought through this a lot. And as a pilot, you can get a weightlessness when you push over on the stick a little bit. So I'd, you know, mentally, I had thought through what's it going to be like. And you just have to be disciplined and don't flail because that's like the reaction that you have. And I was able to do it, and you have to kind of deliberately think about how to move just to go from A to B. You push off with your hands and you float, and it's a whole skill set that you have to learn instantly because there's no like learning time. You know, you're immediately weightless, but it requires a lot of mental discipline to be able to move safely and not just bang your head into things. And there's actually quite a learning curve. That was a really interesting process.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about the photography, because you took more photos in space than any other person. And you mentioned that all of the technical things you had learned, composition, focus, exposure, the basics you had learned on Earth didn't translate to space. How are things different?
Well, you still have to set your shutter speed and your aperture and your ISO. So and focus is critical. So the basics of photography are the same, but there's no, like, green mode. You just can't set the program mode in space because the lighting is so intensely bright or intensely black. And a lot of times you have both in the same image. So a lot of it was manually. In fact, I filmed an IMAX film, A Beautiful Planet, with a Canon 1DC and a C500 video camera, and everything was 100% manual. They actually disabled all the auto features on the ground so we wouldn't be tempted to force us to film everything in manual mode. So you just have to learn, for daylight, here's your exposure. For auroras, here's your exposure. For night cities, here's your exposure. You know, you had to just have these rules of thumb memorized. You didn't have time to get a procedure out and look it up. And it really was a lot of fun. It was, you know, being a manual photographer, something. My photography here is usually with my iPhone. I do have some cool Canon cameras that I use, but in space, it was really manual, and I enjoyed that.
Now, not only were you able to take more photos than anyone ever had from space, you were able to share them from space through Twitter and Instagram accounts. Is that right? Did NASA help you set that up?
They did help. They had one person that was kind of helped me out. And what I would do is I would take the photo or compose the tweet or whatever. And there was a way that you could log on from space. It was super slow. It was dependent on a satellite being in view, and it would get cut off. So basically what I would do was email stuff to this guy on the ground, and then he posted it for me. So they were my tweets. They were my, you know, work. But I did have a guy on the ground that helped the actual mechanics of hitting post. But it was an important thing. The space program, you know, American taxpayers pay for it, and it's a great way to share. Now, there's no, you know, NASA doesn't give you time, or they don't schedule you social media time, or they really don't help you at all. You kind of have to do it on your own. So all of the, you know, Randy Bresnik's been tweeting some great stuff from space today. But all that stuff is pretty much done by the astronauts in their spare time.
And I just want to give the handles to your Twitter and Instagram. They are at AstroTerry, and that's for Twitter. And Instagram is Astro_Terry.
That's right. And I've got a Facebook is just Astronaut Terry Virts.
Oh, great.
I try and post. Sometimes I repost stuff from space. Sometimes I'll post stuff from my books. And sometimes I was filming a project with great white sharks. And so I just posted some stuff from that. I co-hosted the National Geographic eclipse coverage, so I was tweeting stuff from that. So I try to, the subject matter is different here on Earth, but there's still lots of great stuff to take pictures of, so I try to share those when I can.
Now, there was one point in the book where you mentioned that you were confirming the planet you saw was Mercury. You were confirming
right.
It through a star chart app on your iPad. Is that the same app we would use on Earth? I mean, I'm pretty ignorant, because I didn't know if the same science was, you know, if it was still applicable from space.
Well, it was really a problem. Your question is really good, because on a Earthbound star map or app that you're using, it assumes that you're in Wichita, Kansas, and it gives you the sky view from Wichita, Kansas. In space, we're moving 17,500 miles an hour. And if you look at some of the time lapses I did, you know, I start out over Kansas and end up over southern Chile and in the same 30-second clip, you know, a bit sped up. So the star map was almost useless. I could never get it in the right latitude, because your latitude is changing so fast. And the other problem with star map is there's so many stars out there. I mean, you can go out in the middle of Kansas, away from the city lights, and see an amazing sky. I mean, there's a lot of stars up there. But from space, it's like even 10 times more than that. It's amazing. So I literally almost never recognize the constellation. And I'm not an astronomer, but I like astronomy, and I know constellations and stuff. I just couldn't recognize them from space. There were so many stars. And I never knew if I was northern hemisphere or southern hemisphere. And in the cupola, you're upside down, like your head is towards the Earth. So it was just a little, everything was kind of disorienting for navigating the stars.
You wrote about seeing different islands, coastlines, land formations, and whatnot from space. In addition to being good at, you know, let's see, photography, piloting air and spacecraft, science, you also seem to be an expert in geography.
Spending 7 months in space helps with that, especially if you're especially if you're taking the time to look out. I learned all kinds of things I never knew. Kamchatka was a place that I knew from Risk when I played when I was a kid, and seeing it from space was amazing. It looked like Venus. I mean, it was this bizarre volcano-filled peninsula that I had never known. I was flying over southern Africa, and I saw these gigantic sand dunes, and I thought, wow, those are some big sand dunes. And then I looked it up, and sure enough, it was Namibia, and those are actually the biggest sand dunes on Earth. And so I learned a lot about that. Seeing these atolls in the Maldives, I didn't know where those were before, now I do. Just all kinds of geography I learned from taking the time to look out the window. And then we actually have an atlas, like one of those back a long time ago when they used to have atlases and not just Google Maps, is floating in the space station. And I would kind of cross-check my picture with the atlas to figure out what it was I was taking a picture of. And that was a fun experience and learned a lot about the Earth. I learned more about the Earth by color, interestingly, and I have some chapters on that, that I kind of, when I think of places now, I think of their color more than, like, their food or what buildings are there, or what language or the people. Now the color of a country also sticks in my head.
Do you happen to have a book with you?
I do. If you give me a second, it's just right here next to me.
Okay. Because I have three questions that I wanted to ask, but I want to make sure I get this last one in. It's on page 270.
Okay.
And it's when you were re-entering the atmosphere, and it's the paragraph where you say, "As we fell deeper and deeper."
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could read that paragraph.
As we fell deeper and deeper into the atmosphere, the air that used to be such a beautiful thin blue had changed dramatically to a fiery color. At first, the view through my window was pink, then orange, then just complete fire. A mix of orange and red and brown, sparks popping and flying past the window at an incredible speed, with the bright flashes every few seconds as different parts of our heat shield exploded. The flight through plasma was incredible. The atmosphere turns into plasma when the spacecraft smashes into its molecules at speeds of several kilometers per second. During spacecraft reentry, the temperature can approach 2,000 degrees Celsius, and I watch parts of our thermal blankets ripping off and disintegrating. Fire streamed past the window as the heat shield on the bottom of our vehicle ablated, burning up as planned. On the shuttle, this plasma trail seemed ghost-like and controlled, if extreme. On the Soyuz, however, it was as abrupt and violent as it was beautiful.
Thank you. I read it like three times. It was just so beautiful, this description of re-entering space. And so I thought, I'd like to get him saying that.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll say about the book in general, when I had come to the decision I was going to leave NASA, I was there for 16 years. I'd done everything there was to do, and I kind of wanted to move on in life and start my second half before it was too late. And so I made the decision, and writing a book was one of the first things I wanted to do. And I really wanted to write it myself. And I wasn't sure if I could or not, because I was a terrible English student in high school. My teachers would never have guessed in a million years. But I just didn't want to have like Terry Virts with, or I didn't want to have a ghost author. So I wrote it, and I actually, believe it or not, I took, right after I retired from this, I just sat down, cleared my schedule, and I took 2 weeks and wrote. And I wrote the entire book in 2 weeks.
Wow.
And then we went through several months. We did two, drafts or rewrites, I guess. But it was not a bit, it was more cutting. It wasn't like, they didn't do any major changes. And in writing the stories, I mean, the pictures are obviously important in a National Geographic book, but the stories from me personally were kind of my favorite thing and sort of what I was most proud about, just to be able to share the stories in word format, not just pictures.
That was Terry Virts, author of the book View from Above, which was published by National Geographic. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover new episodes at kmuw.org or on iTunes. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita. Our editor is Luann Stevens. Our engineer is John Cyphers, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.